Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Hoping you're having a very pleasant Friday, welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue to look at a book titled This Is My Doctrine, The Development of Mormon Theology, written by a BYU professor named Charles R. Harrell. And yesterday we began looking at a section in his book, Chapter 2, that deals with the Great Apostasy. We cited a number of statements, primarily from church manuals, that are supposed to be vetted or correlated by the First Presidency. So if it's in a church manual, we have to assume this is doctrine that the leadership of the church wants its people to believe. But I want to start off today's show just to put it back into perspective as to what the Great Apostasy really means to Latter-day Saints, or at least what Mormon leaders believe it means and what Latter-day Saint members should believe. This is a statement by Mormon apostle Bruce R. McConkie in his book Doctrinal New Testament Commentary, Volume 3, page 528. He said, "There is to be absolute, total, complete apostasy after John's day," speaking of the Apostle John, "and before the angelic ministrations commence. The falling away shall be complete, the apostasy universal. Gross darkness shall be everywhere. The gospel shall not be found in any nation, among any kindred. No tongue shall teach its truths, and no people rejoice in its blessings, for all these shall receive it as a result of the angelic ministrations," referring, of course, to the restoration of all those truths through their prophet, Joseph Smith. Now, Eric, when you read something like this from Bruce McConkie, is it any wonder why we have a tendency to perhaps roll our proverbial eyes when a Mormon says to us, "Well, all churches have some truth"? Doesn't really sound like that according to what Bruce McConkie's saying. When he says, "The gospel shall not be found in any nation," well, only a person who believes the true gospel really has the right to be a Christian. So why are some Mormons patronizing us when they talk of us as being traditional Christians? We shouldn't be Christians at all, according to that definition.
Let's talk logic for a second, and let's talk about the law of non-contradiction. Something cannot be A and non-A at the same time. When you take a look at the essential, fundamental teachings of the historic Christian church and compare them with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, you're going to see differences one after the other of all of the points that define us as being Christian. That's a major issue. And so the law of non-contradiction says you can't have Mormonism teaching this one set of doctrines, such as who God is or how a person receives salvation or where a person gets authority, and have the Christian also being true at the same time. Somebody's got to be wrong. We both could be wrong, but neither of us think that. So where do we go from there? And that's what we want to deal with. So it is patronizing when a Latter-day Saint says, "Well, you have truth too," and even being called Christians, because I have been called a Christian by many Latter-day Saints, and I'm not comfortable with that because that's making it sound like he thinks that I'm the same as he is. And no, we have differences, and that's okay. We can be upfront with them and we can agree to disagree, but let's not play this game that we're both alike.
Yeah, and oftentimes we do hear that. Well, we're Christians just like you. What does that even mean? It's almost like words have no meaning with some Latter-day Saints. And of course, as a Christian, truth matters a lot to us, and we want to get down to the meat of the matter. And we don't want to try to have a conversation where we're talking past each other. So these are questions that, in my opinion, need to be brought up in the course of the conversation. We need to define our terms, and one of the biggest mistakes I find many professing Christians make when talking with Latter-day Saints is they fail to make the Latter-day Saint, hopefully in a nice way, but make them commit to what they truly believe or what the church is truly teaching on a lot of these subjects. Personal opinions don't matter with me. I want to know, what does the church officially teach on a lot of these things? Now, when it comes to the great apostasy, as we read yesterday, church manuals certainly support this notion that Christianity, as you understand it, Eric, as I understand it, is not true Christianity. We are, as Bruce McConkie said, we're a part of this gross darkness, okay? So using that as a premise for our today's discussion, let's look at what Charles Harrell says in his book, This Is My Doctrine. What does he say on page 31 and 32?
According to traditional LDS teachings, Old and New Testament prophets expressly prophesied of the great apostasy. However, as recent LDS scholars affirm, at least some biblical passages typically cited as prophecies of the apostasy appear to actually be referring to other times or to less dire situations. Of course, Latter-day Saints assert that certain prophecies, such as those predicting a loss of priesthood authority, may have been suppressed by heretical groups and therefore never found their way into the Bible as passed down. It goes on page 32 and says, passages in the Old Testament referring to ancient Israel's apostate condition are seen by many Latter-day Saints as referring to the much later great apostasy and dark ages presumed to have followed the deaths of the apostles.
Let me stop you there because that's an important point that he brings out. Let me say that again. Passages in the Old Testament referring to ancient Israel's apostate condition are seen by many Latter-day Saints as referring to the much later great apostasy and dark ages presumed to have followed the deaths of the apostles. What would we say? That's taking something completely out of its context and giving it a meaning that was never intended by the original author. And we do see this happen a lot. Now, he's going to give, as he says, an example from Isaiah. He says, for example, Isaiah laments.
And this is the passage. The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, and broken the everlasting covenant. And that comes from Isaiah 24:5. This same language appears in Doctrine and Covenants, section 1, verse 15, to describe the situation at the time of Joseph Smith, suggesting that, quote, the everlasting covenant, end quote, spoken of by Isaiah, refers to the everlasting gospel. Latter-day Saints, therefore, commonly infer that Isaiah must have been speaking of apostate Christianity leading up to the time of Joseph Smith. The Old Testament itself gives no clear indication that the everlasting covenant equates to the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And we find this happening a lot with Latter-day Saints. They will take these verses that have a specific meaning, for instance, this one from Isaiah 24:5, referring to covenant Israel in the Old Testament, and somehow lift that from its context, and then use that as a proof text to support their presupposition that Christianity was to cease existing. And of course, as Harrell aptly brings out, and I think quite correctly, that verse has nothing to do with this. So if you're a Latter-day Saint and you're using that as a proof text, you need to stop it, because hopefully we're going to educate enough Christians out there that when you bring those verses up, they're going to check you on that, and rightfully so. You need to be corrected on this. But what does he say on pages 33 and 34 of his book?
And he's referring to the New Testament. He said, there is little evidence that these writers perceived any threats to the church. Although the New Testament writers spoke of a current rebellion and persecution that would continue to rage, the saints were to find solace in knowing that their Savior would soon return in glory to quell this rebellion and rescue the righteous. And then going on to page 37, and he's referring to Acts chapter 20, verses 29 through 30, and then he cites 1 Timothy 4:1.
And we should mention that Acts 20, 29 and 30 is talking about Paul's farewell address to the leaders in the church at Ephesus. So that gives you a proper context there. But then when he goes to 1 Timothy 4:1, what does he say?
Well, 1 Timothy 4:1, it says, some shall depart from the faith. And he said, even assuming that Paul anticipates an entire overthrow of the flock at Ephesus, it isn't clear that he intended his comment for the entire church. His precaution to the elders of the church of Ephesus was that grievous wolves would enter among you. And that's from Acts 20:29.
Now, that's an important point to bring out, because if you're going to take a statement that Paul makes specifically to the leaders in the church at Ephesus, you've got to keep it within that proper context. And what Paul was doing there was warning them that, look, this church in Ephesus, I mean, it was in what you might call a hostile land. There was a lot of paganism that surrounded them, so it could be easy for false doctrines to creep in. And Paul is warning that there's going to be people within the church that are going to start believing things that are not true and are going to need to be corrected.
Right.
So you could say that apostasy, quote unquote, has always been around since the very early days of Christianity. We don't doubt that. But how many times have we had Mormons cite to us 1 Timothy 4:1, where they don't seem to understand what the word some means?
Right.
In other words, some shall depart from the faith. He doesn't say all are going to depart from the faith. And sometimes when I've had Mormons cite to me 1 Timothy 4:1, my rebuttal to that, and you might try this in a witnessing situation, is, well, wait a minute. How do I know that Paul isn't talking about you as a Latter-day Saint?
Yeah.
Because you seem to believe a lot of things that cannot be supported in the Bible. Wouldn't it be more appropriate for me to assume that maybe Paul's talking about Mormons here, although that we know that there were no Mormons at the time?
And this is where context is so important, because you can make anything out of the Bible by taking verses and piecing them together and making it look like what you are believing is true, but the context does not allow for that, as you're pointing out. And then page 41 of the book, this is what is written. Although the prophet recalls in his 1838 account of the first vision that it had never entered into my heart that all churches were wrong. That's from Joseph Smith History 118. His prior autobiographical sketch, written in 1832, states that as early as 1818, he had concluded that all had apostatized from the true and living faith, and there was no society or denomination that built upon the gospel of Jesus Christ as recorded in the New Testament. Given his family and environmental influences, it is little wonder that Joseph had essentially already rejected the Christian denominations of his day before going into the grove of trees near his home to pray for guidance.
And this is one of those parts of this testimony that he has regarding the first vision that I insist does not harmonize with his earlier accounts. And Harold brings that out. I think this is missed on a lot of these leaders of the church that are trying so hard to convince members of their church that all the various accounts that Joseph Smith gave of this alleged first vision harmonize. Certainly, this does not harmonize, folks. If you say it never entered your mind that there were problems in the beliefs of the Christian church, and then earlier you wrote down that you already knew that there were problems within the Christian church, you can't harmonize those two positions. And yet Mormon leaders are trying to tell their people that there's no problem with all these different versions of the first vision. They all harmonize. That's just not true. And Harold brings this out, and I have to commend him in doing so, because this is certainly one of those blatant contradictions in early Mormon church history.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.